Well, Marianne, it's a beautiful night. Let's do two Sunday night radio specials tonight.
Well, I'm ready.
I'm ready.
You're always ready. Ernie Banks with us tonight.
Every time Ernie Banks is on the show, we say goodbye to him at the end of the show and then say we could have done another couple of hours with him.
I want to know, when did you say that first and why did you say that? Let's play two. Do you remember?
Yeah, 1967 in July. It was about 90 degrees outside. I came out to the ballpark early. Everybody was sitting in the dugout and I walked into the locker room and I said that, boy, it's a beautiful day. Let's play two. And they all looked at me and Ron Santo, Billy Williams, everybody. You got to be crazy. Get that crazy man out of here.
Because it was so hot?
It was so hot. It was in July. It was really hot. It was about 105 degrees, and I was ready to go.
Were you like
and
this?
And then, wait a minute, but how did that get, how is that attached to you if it was only the people
in
the dugout?
Yeah, how did it get so popular?
Well, that's a good question. It was a writer named Jimmy Enright. You all never heard of him, but he's with American.
I remember Jimmy Enright, sure.
Mm-hmm. Coached basketball in the winter. He was in the clubhouse when I came in and said that, and he wrote it down, and it stuck with me. So he talked to me about it. I said, well, no, Jim, I really wanted to pass around and talk to the players, get them inspired and all that. So he wrote it, and he wrote about the other part of my life, Mr. Cub. So he wrote Mr. Cub and that.
He wrote the book.
He wrote the book, Mr. Cub.
Yeah. So really, the Mr. Cub moniker and Let's Play 2, Jimmy Enright put that in the paper and publicized
that's
that.
That's right.
I was going to ask you, when you were a kid, though, did you have this same optimistic, happy attitude all the time, and did you get it from your parents?
No, I was not like that. That's a good question. I was recluse. I didn't like to talk to anybody.
Really?
Didn't go anywhere. I wanted to be by myself. I thought people were talking about things that didn't interest me, you know, their own personal life and this and that. And I wanted to talk about how we can change this world.
Well, now you're interested in everything, and but as a kid, you're saying you were completely the opposite.
Yeah, I was the opposite there. Go ahead.
Why? I mean, like, what was? How did that change? I mean, from being a recluse, as you say, to being this super optimistic, happy, go lucky person.
When I came to the Cubs, that would change my whole life. The Cubs, not only playing for the Cubs and playing at Wrigley Field, but you know, just the fans, the people, and the people that came to the game, and I met a lot of them. Wasn't a lot coming to the games when I played. We played all-day games, and you all know that. So I had a chance to say hi to a lot of the fans who came out early, Mary and Christy and Sarah.
Well, I remember watching, interviews on TV with Ernie Banks as a rookie, and he was still that very shy kid. You must laugh when you see or hear those old interviews now.
Yeah, but I learned this from Jackie Robinson at Wrigley Field. I was going to add to that. Because we played the Dodgers in September. They had already won the pennant. We had lost 10 straight. Jackie didn't play that day, and I didn't play. So he came over to third base, and that's when he said, Ernie, I'm glad to see you here, and just listen and learn. So I just didn't talk very much when I came to the Cub. You know that. You did some interviews with me, and I said, what? 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 Why?
Well,
what?
let's get the timetable right here. So you come up to the Cubs in 1954, 3?
I came 53, September 53.
And
so how many years after Jackie Robinson was that?
Well, he was in the majors in 47, wasn't
he? Yeah, he was in the majors in
47.
Yeah, but we played them that day, game.
They and that was the first time you met him?
Yeah, and they already had won the pennant. No, I played against him when they had a barnstorming tour. You know, used to have barnstorming tour. A lot of the players traveled, DiMaggio, Bob Feller, and all of them. In the major leagues, they would get five or six guys and play in the southern cities to make money. And Jackie did that. He had Newcomb, Campanella, Dobie, and all of them. And I played against them.
When was that?
This was in 1949.
Mm-hmm. So you met him then in 1949.
I met him then, yeah.
And yet your background's a lot of similarity because you played in the Negro Leagues for the Kansas City Monarchs, and that was Jackie Robinson's team, too, at one time, wasn't it?
Yeah, and we were born on the same day, a different year.
No kidding.
Yeah, so I've had a lot of great contacts and great energy. And the wisdom I learned from Jackie, it was just unbelievable. I can't
like
explain.
What?
You know, just listen and learn and to everybody, kids. And I learned playing with the Cubs. Once I left the ballpark, I want to sign every kid's autograph. I look at the face, and I look at this kid. I said, gosh, I might ask this kid for a job one day. So Jackie kind of passed that wisdom on to me. Be nice to people, you know, because you're going to meet them again. And he talked about my position as a player, that I had quick hands and that I could throw well and I was a smart player and all of that. And his knowledge was the key part of his ability. He was a very smart player.
I want to talk to Ernie Banks a little bit about what it was like in Chicago here coming up with the Cubs in September of 1953. As you mentioned, Jackie Robinson had already broken the color barrier, but here in Chicago, we were a little behind. We'll get to that more on the Sunday Night Radio Special here on WGN. Bob Cerrad and Marianne Murciano with you after this. Back on the WGN Sunday Night Radio Special with number 14, Mr. Cub, Ernie Banks.
So, just coming off watching this unbelievable movie about Jackie Robinson, so I'm just curious about when you started with the Cubs, what was that like? I mean, I'm sure that many of the barriers were still there, and it was probably still pretty difficult to play.
Yeah, I came along with Gene Baker. I don't know whether people remember him, but he's a little bit older than me. And what Jackie told me, Hank, and Willie, the three of us.
Hank.
Aaron.
And Willie Mays.
Remember Hank Aaron?
Yes.
Of course.
Number 44.
Of course.
Played for Milwaukee. You remember him?
Yes. I mean, I don't remember him personally, but I know who he is.
But you and Gene Baker were the first...
Blacks to play for the Cubs.
For the Cubs, and you both came up at the end of the 53 season.
That's correct.
All right, go ahead. Yep.
And Gene played shortstop in L.A. L.A. was a Triple-A team for the Cubs, and he played shortstop. So when he came to the Cubs, they put him at second base and put me at short. And I was a very unusual type kid. I mean, I learned from my dad. My dad could do anything. You know, you'd have to show him stuff. I'm sure you all been around people that just can make windows and
yes.
fix gloves. My dad was like that. And my life was like that. When I came to the Cubs, I never played in the major leagues. I played in Kansas City. And I didn't know anything about playing. You know, they wanted to give me more training, send me to the minor league. Well, I just came in and just did it.
So how were you received by the team in 53 at the end of the season?
And the fans.
And the fans.
The team or the fans or both?
Both. Yeah, well, the team and then the fans.
Well, the fans were more receptive than the team. The players were a little bit different, you know, a little standoffish and quiet. And, you know, they got... And I didn't know this, but Gene Baker told me one day I was playing a game, and after the game was over and was going home, he said, Ernie, a lot of the guys on the team don't like you. And I didn't know what he was saying. He said, you're showing them up. You're hustling too much. I was running to my position, running back and all that. And that's what I learned from Jackie. But I was hustling too much, so the players on the Cub team...
Like you were showing them up.
Yeah.
So was it because of how you were playing, or was it because it was hard for them to, all of a sudden, there's a black player on the team, and they just don't know what to do with that information
Although
in 1953?
Jackie Robinson had been in the majors at that point 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, and then we had two, you know, Gene Baker was there, and, you know, they just didn't respond to me at all because I, you know, hustled more. Gene had more experience than I did, so he knew how to go up in and out from second base to the dugout and all of that. But I was just running and hustling and running and hustling and running, and the players on the team didn't like me. But later on, they began to get a lot better as I played and things began to happen.
Like what turned it?
Hitting 512 home runs, that might have something
to do with
it.
But that didn't happen in 1 year,
that's true,
right?
Yeah.
No, we had a plan manager. His name was Phil Cavaretta. I'm sure you all know who he is. He went to Lane Tech. He played for the Cubs 1945. And I hit a home run. My first home run I hit was in St. Louis, and I just ran around the bases. I was ashamed of running around the bases. Everybody looking at me. So I got in the dugout, and nobody responded, you know.
Nobody said anything?
No,
I mean, like,
we got beat. We lost the game, but nobody said anything.
Must have felt horrible.
Was there a turning point? Was there something that happened, or was it just a slow, gradual process?
With me?
With you being accepted by your teammates?
I think it came a little later because, you know, my life has always been close to the fans, the people, the fans. The fans were more behind me than the players. So the players saw the fans behind me, so then they began to get a lot better.
So how did that feel that you score a home run, you're running base to base, and then you get to the dugout and no reaction? What were you thinking that was about back then?
I was ashamed when I hit it because I knew that showing up to players, you know, I just felt that in my own mind that, you know, I'm hitting a home run. They're not hitting a home run.
Wait a minute. That's crazy, though. That's what you're supposed to be doing out there.
I know, helping the team. I know
it.
I heard Mr. Rigney say that one time. He said, well, Ernie Banks got 20-some home runs, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's what he's supposed to do. I thought I was doing what I was supposed to do.
And why did Mr. Wrigley say that? Was there a complaint about you? Was he trying to explain it, trying to make the players change their attitudes?
Well, he knew that the players were that way. He knew a lot about the players, although he didn't come to a lot of games. But he knew a lot about the players, the manager, the general manager, and all of them. I know they didn't like it. You know, nobody liked it. You know, it seemed like to me, I see that now. Somebody hit a home run and all of that, and they come in the dugout. I mean, some of the people like it, but most of them don't like it. You know, they're kind of envious of of you doing it, and they're not doing it.
There were only, in those days, a few thousand people who had come to Wrigley Field for a game. Hard to believe now, but back then, in the 50s, attendance was sparse. So you had a chance to really have conversations with the fans sitting in close proximity to the players at the ballpark, didn't you?
Pat Piper was the announcer. You all don't remember him, but he used to give the lineup out, and people used to keep the scores at Wrigley Field when I first came. Everybody kept score and watched the game, and they had more interest in the game than other fans do now. And they don't do that now, but
they were really into it. And you talked to them a lot.
Yeah, I talked to them a lot.
Did that bother your teammates that you talked to the fans a lot and that the fans really liked you?
Well, they didn't see me because this is what I did. I always got to the park early. I wanted to sleep at the ballpark. I get there an hour and a half before the team gets there, the dress in the morning for the game. And then I would go out, and they'd open the gate kind of early at that time. And the gates would open, and the people would come in, the few that come in, and I would go out, shake hands with them, sign autographs, and chat with them, and they would be asking me, like I was their own child, how do you feel today? You think you're going to do this today? They didn't talk about winning or losing. They just talk about the game.
And why did you do that? Why would you get there an hour and a half before the team got there to talk to the fans?
Yeah, especially when you said you, as a kid, you were not like this, and all of a sudden you're coming out of your shell.
Yeah,
how did that happen?
Why did you want to talk to them?
I just want to meet people. My wife ran me out of the house.
So you were married then? Did you live close to the park?
Get out of here. I live south.
And so it was really the ballpark, and as you said, the Cubs changed you.
Yeah, they did. They changed my whole life. I mean, it's like an education, and I don't look at playing, you know, the games and all that. I mean, winning is important, you know, in 69 and all of that. No hitters and all that. I mean, that's important in life, but it's really the people, the fans. They're the ones. And as I've gotten older, you know, they've gotten older too, so they still remember some of the things that happened at the games and all of that.
Do you talk to fans even today who were your fans way back then?
Yes, they were children too, you know, practically? I do. I talk to their fathers, talk to their mothers, talk to their kids, everything.
By the way, Marion, every time Ernie mentions a name and then he looks at both of us and he says, "And you don't remember him." I remember everybody he's talking about. I met everybody he's talking
about. Well, you were with me one day and you talked about this a lot. And it's a true story, you know, driving down the street.
Oh, God. I was driving down the street with Ernie when we passed a guy in his backyard on a game day, and he was, like, mowing his lawn in the backyard. I was giving Ernie a ride back downtown. The game had started. We couldn't stay for the game.
And you were one of those little kids getting to the park early to talk to him, right?
Well, I was at one point, but now I was grown up and remained a fan. And then I just said to Ernie in jest, "Hey, see that guy in the backyard? He should be at the ball game today. He shouldn't be mowing his lawn." And Ernie said, "You're right. Hang on a second. Stop the car." And he gets out of my car, runs down the passageway into the backyard, puts his arm around the guy. I see this from my car, and he points to the ballpark. "You know, you shouldn't be doing this. Go to the game." And then he runs back down the passageway, gets back in my car, and as we drive away, I see the guy standing over his lawnmower in shock. And to this day, I'm sure he tells the story of the day the great Ernie Banks himself came to his backyard in Wrigleyville and said, "That's what are you so doing funny. In the yard? Go to the game." We got to take a break. Back with more. I want to talk about 42, the movie, and also how Jack Brickhouse helped you. Ernie Banks with Bob Sirott and Marianne Merciano tonight on WGN. It's the WGN Sunday Night Radio Special, an hour with Ernie Banks. Tonight, Bob Sirott and Marianne Merciano with you.
I think this should be like a once a month we have our chat with Ernie Banks. Because every time we talk to him, to you, Ernie, we uncover new things that we had no idea.
But you said that. That's true. My life is like that. It's like from people. I learn from people. I've mentioned that earlier. Wisdom from people. I mean, there's so much.
Well, we learn from you.
So much I know about my life and I've done. I've had an audience with the Pope in 1969. And I went to Philadelphia with President Ford and Air Force One. He was going to the All-Star Game. I spoke before five presidents. I mean, there's been so many things that happened in my life that, you know, it's just amazing to me.
I get the impression from what you said here a few minutes ago before the break that you really like to have people think of you, remember you for things other than baseball, don't you?
Yes, I do. I like for people to know me rather than what I did. I know what I did. I want to know. And then now I kind of question people. They get used to it. "Oh, yeah, what school do you go to?" I told some kids the other day, "You should be going to MIT." MIT for what?
Ernie's Mr. Curious.
Yeah.
Right, I know. Even sitting here before this interview, Ernie was asking me 10,000 questions about my daughter.
We should do a show every month with him, only he should be the host.
I know, and it's almost like he's the host. Well,
So it's not the statistics of your baseball record that you want people to remember you with, is it?
No, it's not. But I have great interest in people. People are very, very interested to me now. You know, didn't in the beginning of my life. But now, most of the kids, I want to know where they go to school, what are you majoring in? And sometimes I tell them, "You should be going to MIT and you should be a nuclear physicist." And they look at me and they start laughing. The kids I told the other day look at me and start laughing. "Nuclear physics? Yes, you got to know math and science. And in MIT, you can get it." And they look at me, "MIT, wow, that's a great school. It costs too much money." You can go there.
Did you give that advice to your children?
That's one of the disappointments in my life, is my kids. I played baseball, didn't play in the World Series, but just for them to go into great schools and get an education.
Same How many thing, kids do you have?
I have four.
Four?
So twin boys.
Twin boys?
And two girls.
And two girls. And they you say they did play baseball?
No.
Or they did not play baseball?
One of them did. One of them played in Australia.
Oh.
And I took them to Korea, but the other one didn't play.
So you're saying, other than not being in the World Series, your other disappointment had to do with what?
Them going to school. I wanted my kids, my boys to go to Harvard, my daughter to go to Smith.
And that didn't happen?
No, it didn't happen. They just didn't care for school.
That's what all parents want for their kids.
But that's what I wanted.
But you know that kids end up, you start realizing they are their own people.
Yeah,
so
I didn't know that. I have twins, so I didn't know that, you know, that their own people. I said, these guys, me and Billy had a day at Wrigley Field. They got an announcement that, you know, the Wrigley's going to pay for our education for our kids. Me and Billy shook hands and said, oh, boy, that's great.
Billy Williams.
Got three girls.
Right.
But it didn't happen, you know. That, I still think about that today. I want my kids to go to school and get a great education.
And do you have grandchildren, too?
Yeah, I have grandkids. One of my grandkids is from the Philippines. He was adopted from the Philippines. And I have another one that's the girl. She's in Texas.
Cool.
But I, you know, try to inspire them, you know, to get an education. I always felt I didn't do it. I didn't get education. But after the season was over, I went back to school, five different schools, Truman College, Columbia College, Arizona State, Northwestern, University of Chicago. That's all I did. And when the
after season, you stopped playing?
Yeah. Education was important.
We were talking about Jackie Robinson and your meeting with him initially. But you kept in touch over the years, and he was a very educated man, wasn't he? UCLA, right?
Uh-huh, he was UCLA.
Did you talk about life and education and other matters? Tell me about that.
And, you know, I talked to Jackie about a lot of, you know, the speaking engagement after the season was over, about, you know, his life, his goals. And he talked about his goals. He wanted to be the president of the bank, the Freedom Bank in New York. He worked for Chock Full of Nuts. He worked for the Governor Rockefeller. I mean, he did so many, did for housing in Brooklyn, New York. So much of that, I wanted to be like, follow his pattern. He was like a brother, a father, an uncle, a friend, and all of that to me personally.
What would he say? Would he inspire you to do those kinds of things? Or would he? Was it just that being near him like spread his charisma the way that he was.
That's right. He didn't say it. You know, I just figured it out and picked it up from him. That's what he really cared about me. I was kind of like his son. He had sons, and I know his sons. His son went to Africa, Tanzania, raised the farm, raising coffee. I got in contact with him, and I was going to help sell his coffee to Major League Baseball, but they didn't do it in the United States.
When was this?
This was about 10 years ago. The coffee was made over there, produced over there, the best coffee that you could make. And he was selling it here, and he was going to try to sell it to Major League Baseball. And he never, you know, I went to the baseball and, you know, all of that, diversity and all of that. And he didn't sell it, you know. It was great coffee, but I was close to his kids, close to him. Close to Rachel. I went to Japan with her together. Me and her went to Japan. I learned so much from her and her knowledge and experience in life and kids and families. And they didn't talk about racial situation. They just talk about doing something to make this a better world. And that was what my whole life about.
He died very young, didn't he? Was he 53 when he died? And you kept in touch with the family, obviously.
Yeah.
And now people who didn't know the Jackie Robinson story, who have seen the movie 42, fortunately know the story now. And I wonder, in reality, how different it was. I mean, everything was depicted there. Branch Rickey was the guy with the idea. Jackie Robinson may not have been the best player, but he had the right temperament to do it. The other players and fans gave him a very difficult time. Is that an accurate picture of the way it really was?
It really is. I mean, he was like that. But the one real guy was Wendell Smith, who I knew, and Wendell helped me, and Gene Baker. And
he's in the movie, sort of narrates it. He's the writer in the movie, following Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, but Wendell Smith, way before Jackie, was talking to Happy Chandler, who was the commissioner, and, you know, to get more blacks in baseball, Bill Veeck and all those folks, to get more blacks. He was working to get more blacks in baseball. Now, he was hired by the Dodgers. Wendell Smith was hired by the Dodgers to follow Jackie around.
Right.
To get him places to stay and people he could be with, stayed in homes. He couldn't stay in hotels, but there's staying home, different places. He kind of nurtured Jackie all the way through his interest in baseball. And me, too. He did that for me. did that for Gene Baker, you know, just kind of help us. Don't go over here. He used to tell me this, don't go over there. Stay over here. Stay over there.
So he would make arrangements for you?
Yes, he made arrangements for Jackie, too.
Right.
That's what he did.
In the movie, that's a major part of what he does.
Yeah, that's what he did. He was a great guy.
And he was at Channel 9 doing sports here and writing for the Tribune for a while.
That's right.
And in the movie, they say, you know, he points out that he himself was not allowed in the press box.
That's right. He was not. He had to do his He had to do his stories from the stands. And then later he came on and, you know, and our lives connected. He did some sports announcing for WGN television, and I took his place.
Yeah, Ernie for a while was doing some sports on TV. Well, what did Wendell Smith, did he go on from here, or did he pass away in Chicago?
He passed away, yeah.
He did.
And his, my wife named Winella, and she's still around. And we were just good friends. She'd go by his house, and he was just a deep guy that's very honest and very truthful.
When you see the movie, I mean, seeing the movie, I came away with, there were so many heroes in this movie. Of course, Jackie, and of course, his wife, Rachel, who really supported him during this entire time, as hard as it was, and Wendell Smith. And then also, just Branch Rickey himself. Yes, it was time for this to happen, finally, and somebody eventually had to do it, but it was a... It seemed to me like it was a pretty brave thing for the owner of a team to do. I mean, because it was not an easy road.
No, it was not. But Mr. Rickey was a baseball man, and I didn't know him. But this thing was making money.
Right.
And the thing that he wanted to make money with Jackie, and Jackie obliged to that. And what a smart player.
He wanted to increase his fan base in Brooklyn.
Was.
We talked about Wendell Smith. Jack Brickhouse was another big influence on you. Did he help loosen you up in interviews? Is that what how Jack helped you?
Well, just not to do any interviews. I didn't have any interest in doing any interviews because I didn't know what to say. What kind of answer to say? Well, you hit a curveball? I don't know. I don't know what you did. I didn't quite understand, you know, the dynamics of interviews. You know, it didn't make sense to me. I mean, people talking to you about things that they already know, and you got to answer them. And
so, how did Jack teach you what to do? How did he help you?
Well, just by following him, I watched him in New York when he was with Chock Full of Nuts. I don't know if you remember that. He worked for a coffee company there. And
I'm talking about Jack
Brickhouse.
How did Jack Brickhouse help you with the interviewing? Yeah.
Well, he just told me what to say, what not to say.
but Jackie Robinson helped you interviewing.
With interviewing with people. Jackie was more with the people and my own life and making it better and knowing that once I walk out the door, that people are going to be looking at me, watching you, following you, and knowing all about your kids and everybody.
So basically understanding the situation. Because it's got to be, for somebody who has no knowledge of how the media works, which you had no business knowing because you were a baseball player, to basically teach you the ropes and explain the situation to you. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't say it. No, what it was with Gene Baker and Jackie Robinson is that he will let you do things and you learn from your own experience by doing them.
Right.
He didn't tell you, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Because we played a game in Alabama one time and the bus pulled up and all the players got off. They went in the hotel and they changed clothes. We had to stay on the bus, me and Gene. Mm. So I asked Gene, I said, Gene, you want some candy? He said, he didn't say anything. So I got off the bus, went into Greyhound Station. I walked in the front, and I didn't realize it. Everybody stopped and started looking at me. I turned my head, look, what is going on? And one guy came to me and said, you got to go around the back. And I did. I went around and got some candy. It came back in there. Gene didn't say anything. He didn't even laugh. He knew what was going on.
Before we let you go tonight, Ernie, I have to get your take on the big plans for Wrigley Field, the video scoreboard, the whole rehab. What do you think about the plans?
Oh, I've heard about it. It's different for me because I like Wrigley Field as it is, and everybody want bigger dugouts, bigger bathroom, bigger clubhouses, and all of that. But I think it's just a wonderful place for me, and I like the way it is. It's a tough place to play now. I mean, you know, foul lines and the wind and all of that. But I like the way it is. But the new owners, Tom Ricketts, they're going to make some changes and make it better and bigger and more entertaining for the fans. And
well, better facilities for the players to practice right?
A lot of the players, I mean, more batting cages and all of that. So they're making it more for the players. And, you know, these are young players, so they got to have the better facilities, you know. They got to have nice clubhouse with television, big chairs, and all of that.
Change with the times?
Yeah, with the times. Mine is not that. Time flies when you're living in joy. It creeps when you're living in misery.
That's right. Words of wisdom.
No.
We can leave you with that tonight. It's the great number 14, Mr. Cub, Ernie Banks. Nice to hear about the real number 42 from number 14 tonight. And we'll catch up with you down the road, Ernie. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ernie.
A couple of final thoughts after this on the WGN Sunday Night Radio Special with Bob Surratt and Marianne Murciano.
You think limo, think AMS.
Promotional consideration for the Sunday Night Radio Special is provided by AMS Limousine. For a great ride, call 847-446-5148. Yes, that's AMS Limousine at 847-446-5148. You'll get a great ride.
The WGN Sunday Night Radio Special wrapping up, and it was great to visit with the Hall of Famer, Ernie Banks, again, who said, by the way, on the way out, we were talking about 42, the movie by Jackie Robinson, and you know there's that scene in the movie where, to show his rage, he goes down in the runway at one point and busts a bat up, and you see the anger there depicted. And I asked Ernie about that, and he said he had quite a temper. So suffice it to say, that they put that scene in the movie to give you that, but there had to be a lot of instances of that kind of thing happening with him. It wasn't just one outburst.
I mean, what a frustrating time to live.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know what I love about Ernie, too? You know, on his way out, we're taking a picture for our website. And he's so funny, and he's so creative, and he's, you know, he always comes prepared. And, you know, he had two baseballs to hand to us. And then, you know, they're trying to mug for the picture, and he doesn't want just a regular picture. He wants me to pose as if I'm hitting a ball, and he's teaching me how to do it, and you're the umpire. So cute.
And if you want to see that picture, it's posted. And thank you for listening. The WGN Sunday Night Radio Special is produced by Craig Collins. Technical assistance, Jason Skaggs. Pete McMurray is in the on-deck circle.
Have a great rest of your Sunday, and we'll talk again next week.